Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The biggest breaking news stories, an outspoken opinion. The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed for your company. It's another beautiful day out there. Lovely blue skies, sunshine. Let's try and be cheery in the face of all the bad news. Goodness me. Vaccine passports, blood clots, face masks in the classroom, huge cost of travelling if we ever get to travel abroad. Anything else we can get miserable about? I'm going to do my best to try and keep everyone cheery. Although I have to say, when I saw the news about face masks in the classroom for secondary school kids to continue till May the 17th, I'm not going to lie, shed a bit of a tear just with sheer frustration that every single measure that is brought in is always extended, isn't it? Every single thing. And there is never anything which is like just for a few weeks. Nothing that has ever been brought in for a few weeks during this pandemic has ever lasted for a few weeks. It's a few months or who knows, a few years. Once we've allowed those face masks in the classroom, that is going to be it. Well, we're going to be talking to campaigners on that. We're going to be talking about vaccine passports. Interestingly, the United States White House has ruled out a federal vaccination passport for the American people, saying no, their right to privacy and the right not to be asked for their papers is a fundamental American freedom. Bet you wish we had a UK constitution now, folks. And we're going to be talking about the obviously fears about the AstraZeneca vaccine amid the concerns about blood clots. All of that coming up. We're going to talk about a lot of it with my guest who's joining me all this morning, late editor at the iNewspaper, Benjamin Butterworth. Good morning to you, Benjamin.
Good morning, Julia.
Lovely to chat to you. Let's talk, first of all, about the issue over blood clots. Now, this is something that has been raised, I know, by a number of scientists, long before it hit the front pages of the newspapers around Europe. And then, of course, we had issues raised by the European Medicines Agency, Macron and Merkel and other people, because they'd raised lots of concerns about, you know, this vaccine not being effective in over 65s and not being effective in under 55, and goodness knows what, because they changed their tune and got so many things wrong. Let's face it, lots of people didn't pay much attention. There is undoubtedly a case that there have been a small number, very, very, very small number of cases where people have had blood clots, particularly in the brain, very rare forms of blood clots, after having the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, what we don't know, we've also had some issues with similar issues with the Pfizer vaccine. What we don't know is whether they have been caused by the vaccine, whether these were just, you know, bad luck, or whether, in fact, of course, there is an issue that actually blood clots are a factor and a big concern about getting COVID, and therefore actually fewer people would have got blood clots from having the vaccine than from not having the vaccine and getting COVID. So there's an awful lot to sort of pull apart there. But what is your reaction to the news that there are concerns about possibly particularly younger people taking these vaccines in terms of their trade-off of risks, but also the decision by Oxford University to pause their jabs for the testing trials for young people aged 6 to 17, children who are currently undergoing trials for the AstraZeneca jab?
Well, exactly, yeah. So children, the trials are not going to continue to go ahead. So clearly the scientists must wonder whether the possibility of that is higher as you get to younger people and higher among children, which they're currently testing a version of this dose on. Now, what we do know for certain is that the incidence of blood clots is less common among people that have had the AstraZeneca vaccine than would normally be imagined, which suggests that, you know, we don't know necessarily whether one has caused the other. That's what they're clearly trying to work out for certain. But we know that it's not sort of a number that should be scary. But the reality is that even if it was slightly higher than the incidence that you naturally get in society of blood clots, that would still be a far smaller chance of getting a blood clot than someone getting COVID and getting seriously ill without the vaccine. And I think that's something that we ultimately have to square. It appears that this really is an incredibly safe vaccine. Yeah. You know, all the indications say that. But even if there were small possibilities of things, as there are with an awful lot of medicines,
yes,
then that would still be a much lower risk than the actual COVID is.
This is the key thing. It's very easy to see these headlines and say, oh, no, this is terrible. This will cause me this or that problem. As I had a really unpleasant reaction to my first dose of AstraZeneca. I know an awful lot of people who have. But again, people can have bad reactions to a number of different vaccines. I had a heck of a lot of vaccines. I've done a lot of international travel over the years, and it's the worst one I've ever had. But that wouldn't necessarily put me off in terms of, you know, life is full of trade-offs and you're trading off risks. I think we've established very clearly in the last year that both the government and indeed Sage and the general public are pretty bad at working out risks. Now, the risks for, say, someone like my parents in their late 70s, the risk of them not taking the vaccine or them taking the vaccine, absolutely blatantly clear they should take the vaccine and, you know, having their second doses. There is a different trade-off with, say, people in their 20s or 30s, and certainly with children, at incredibly low risk. If you are healthy under the age of 50, your chances of getting any serious problem from COVID or from dying from COVID are infinitesimally small, in which case are you trading off one risk for the other, and what's the balance? Now, this is going to raise some issues in terms of the government wanting, well, moving the goalposts from, of course, the whole vaccinating the most vulnerable, and then we cry freedom when 70 plus are vaccinated. Then it became 50 plus, and then it became all adults. But this is undoubtedly going to affect the rollout, isn't it? In terms of young people's willingness to take the vaccine. Now, if it's a shrug, this will help with the herd immunity, but it won't make any difference to me. That's one thing. But I know particularly a lot of young women who are concerned about fertility issues. There's no evidence of any risk to fertility, but they haven't got any evidence 100% that it's not a risk of fertility. So people are going to start having concerns which they perhaps didn't have before, don't you think?
I mean, you know, the risks of a blood clot being caused from birth control pills are significantly higher than any evidence from the AstraZeneca vaccine. And yet we don't sort of routinely question that.
No, on the contrary, this is discussed with you at great length when you go on the pill by your GP. But also, by the way, not being on the pill and getting pregnant and having an abortion is a much higher physical risk. So, you know, our pregnancy is quite high risk for women as well. So it's a weighing up of relative risk, isn't it?
Exactly. But, you know, you asked the question, do you think under 30, do you think young people will be less likely to get it? I think if there's any characteristic that an overwhelming majority of young people have, it's a sense that they are invincible to many health problems. And so I've got a suspicion that it won't scare that many young people, this blood clot risk. I can comprehend maybe people that are thinking of getting pregnant in the near future and want kids, whether those specific people will be alarmed by it if there's some evidence. And that's you know, you can understand that if that turns out to be the case. But no, I don't think it will affect the rollout too much. And of course, Britain has the lowest vaccine hesitancy rate of any country in the world. And I think a lot of people made their mind up about this vaccine, and people don't tend to change their minds once they've made it up. And they know the risks of COVID, and that's far more present in people's anxieties.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, I wonder again if a lot of people will be getting the vaccine who are in the younger age groups who aren't so concerned about getting COVID for themselves. They're more concerned about, obviously, older relatives. It's always been my concern over this period, but also concerned about getting access to ordinary daily services. Now, the vaccine passports idea is being pushed. There's a lot of politics around this. The practicalities, though, we were told it wouldn't be pubs and restaurants initially. I've no doubt at all if vaccine passports are brought in, this COVID certification, that would be pubs and restaurants, you know, later on. Of course, that they're reopening next week outdoors, so it would be too soon for that to be brought in. But we're now talking also about high street shops as well. The idea that if you want to go try on a coat or a pair of shoes, that you have to produce a vaccine passport. I mean, I think one just gloriously laughable if it wasn't so sinister. We're going to be talking to a Big Brother Watcher, Silky Carlo, about their campaign against this. But it's interesting that overnight, the United States White House has ruled out a federal vaccine passport for Americans. And we know a number of states, Texas, Florida and others, have said that they will not allow this. They've actually going to refuse to allow this in their states. It would be really interesting that we go down that route and the Americans don't.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think what we will certainly have is vaccine passports for getting between countries. And I imagine the US will introduce that, as it's already clear that we will, and many other countries. I think in this country, there's a lot of questions being raised about the vaccine passport. And I've certainly been questioning the idea myself as we learn more about the government's plans. For example, they said at first, when they laid out the lockdown roadmap to leaving, that by the 21st of June, that would be the final stage that meant social distancing was axed. Mm-hmm. But now there's a lot of claims that social distancing in places like nightclubs, festivals, cinemas, that it will only be axed if you have the vaccine passport, which isn't what the government said in the first place.
No, it's almost like we can't trust a word they say, isn't it?
And then the other point is that according to the Sunday Telegraph, this won't be available until around September. Mm. And so the question I have is, if we release the country into some form of normality on the 21st of June, how are they going to convince people suddenly that they could go into the nightclub or maybe even the pub one day earlier, but now they're banned without having this passport?
But of course, we'll have a new variant then. I mean, I think what we'll start is a bingo card. I'm going to start a sweepstake in the office. What country the new variant is going to be from, which they're going to come up with? Because every time we get close to freedom, they spring a new variant on us, which is obviously far more deadly and far more terrible. They never turn out to be more deadly. I mean, some of them are more infectious. But again, why does that matter if people have been vaccinated en masse, as we would have been by then? But I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? It's they can't bring a lot of this in quite yet because they haven't got the technology and they haven't got it all sorted. There are so many practical issues around the fact that, you know, people have this idea that there's a big sort of computer database somewhere with everyone's names on it and who's had what dose when of which jab. That doesn't exist. There is no central database of everyone who's had COVID. It has to go into your personal medical records. These are very, very different issues. But it is fascinating how much is moving on. The politics of that is interesting, though. We've had now a promise. Michael Gove told MPs behind the scenes. We had Nadeem Sahawi, the vaccine rollout minister, yesterday. It was saying that there will be a vote in Parliament. Now, they may well have a vote in Parliament with a statutory instrument where you don't actually end up seeing the whole of Parliament vote. I think that they have to be taking this to the floor of the House. We're told yesterday that Labour are probably going to whip against vaccine passports. We've got at least 40 Tory MPs opposed. We've got we already had a whole bunch of Labour and backbench Labour MPs, including Jeremy Corbyn, opposed. Liberal Democrats opposed. However, if the SNP vote with the Conservatives, which would be an interesting grouping in the government, then we could actually see vaccine passports go through. That would be a fascinating vote, wouldn't it? And that would be pretty, pretty telling about where we're going.
It would, although I think there could possibly also be some trickery in what the government puts forward. Because, for example, if what they put forward says, these pubs and these businesses like nightclubs and festivals can only go forward, can only get rid of social distancing if they have the COVID passport, well, then that makes it very difficult for Labour to vote against, because they would effectively be voting against all sorts of businesses reopening. Yeah. And so I think, the government can play a card like that. That makes it far more likely that it would pass Parliament.
Yeah, indeed. I'm just always amazed at the number of people, as I keep saying, if you did a Venn diagram of people who were desperate to have COVID passports to go and attend concerts, football matches, pubs and whatever, and people who actually go and do those things, there's barely any overlap at all. I really don't think we should listen to the opinions who don't actually. If you've not been to a concert, a football match or a pub in the last 3 years, I'm not sure your opinion's that useful on this topic. 6:47 is the time. More from Benjamin Butterworth. Going to talk about face masks in the classroom. Travel. And a hospitality High Court case as well. That's all coming up here on Talk Radio.
The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.